Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, helping you jumpstart your career in financial services. As always, I'm bringing to you fresh ideas from a recently aired video on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Do me a favor, my friend, and text me at 214-699-7599 with any questions you might have from this show so I can help you along your journey in becoming a successful financial professional. Again, that number is 214-699-7599. All right, let's hop into today's topic. All right, everybody, what's going on? This is your CFP on YouTube, Dominique Henderson. I got a friend of the podcast, my brother from another mother, Mr. Preston Cherry, joining us again. What's up, man?
Dominique, what's going on? Once again, we on the microphone.
Oh, yeah, man. I always enjoy talking to you. It's been a little while. We saw each other at, I guess, Quad A's conference was the last time we saw each other through the airport terminals together. And right. There's been a lot that's...
And Captain Zeta-Jones.
you going way back with that. Was it the 90s or something like that? Maybe early 2000s?
The terminal or something like
that. Yeah, the terminal. You're right. I remember that. I wanted to catch up with you. There's been a lot of activity going on in both of our practices, but I really wanted to center today's discussion around a question that I got about basically the CFP designation versus a master's in financial planning. And no better person, I think, to help me with this topic and break this question down than yourself, because you teach at the flagship university in this nation for the financial planning program at Texas Tech. And you also teach with Dalton's review program. So you're seeing this stuff all the time. And you know the benefits of either, and you got a master's degree yourself in financial planning, and you're working on your PhD. So you are a subject matter expert if I ever found one.
Yes.
So let's just kind of break this out. I want to look at just the question on the surface from a 30,000 foot view, because I'm wondering if you agree with me. I don't think versus is the right way to put this. I think they're both relevant. Mm-hmm. I think you can get a lot of ROI out of both, but it's really what path you want to take, you know, mm-hmm. going into this industry, right? And so just kind of setting it up that way. What are your thoughts initially with hearing that question? What comes
right.
to mind?
I agree with you as far as the versus part. It could be one or the other. And like many things, it depends. And remember back in the day, everybody was trying to get the MBA, right? Yeah. That was the hot thing to get. And as we're learning now, MBAs are still good. They're still relevant just on general business. But you know what? Here's the thing. I like the word of master, right? Master of business administration, right? And my master's is in master's of personal financial planning. All right. Master's is the inference from there is mastery. Mm. So it gives you, it drills down on kind of information that you learn in class or even passing the CFP exam. All right. The CFP exam gives us a base. All right. It gives us that framework to build upon. And then as we know in the industry, we have advisors that that become specialized and have niches. All right. So the masters of personal financial planning is a mastery beyond a little bit or of you know, fundamental subject matter. You're learning from experts depending on where you gain or where you're studying, you know, whether it be an online, but even at Dalton, for example, there's my colleagues, they have deep and rich backgrounds in their areas of expertise. Okay.
So you like have, tax or estate planning or
state or whatnot. So you're getting, and they're practitioners as well. And you can get the same from a university program as well. Okay. So there's a lot to be said that to have the master's degree. So now when you're talking about I do encourage having CFP and rather than versus.
CFP. Okay, so let's unpack that in order. This is what I want to come out of this discussion while we're having this kind of fireside chat, because I can tell we can go way deep down the rabbit hole on this one. But I don't want people to think that this is a quote unquote checkbox to success. And here's what I mean by that. Like, if I just go do all this studying and I get this master's or I get the CFP or I get both, then I've kind of punched my ticket to success. I like what you said. It's a base. It's a base that you build from. And so unpack that just a little bit more.
Right. It's a base. And it's also a signal. It's a signal. It's a signal of more, getting more expertise. Just because you have a laundry list of alphabet soup behind your name, that doesn't actually guarantee that the quality of the service or the advice is like through the roof. However, you can bet on that that person has taken the time and the investment to get more and more specialized in a way that that person has learned, analyzed, studied, and maybe even applied, particularly they have, because they're a planner. You've engaged them into a partnership, a financial planning partnership, to where they've applied what they learned and got more mastery. So you start with a fundamental base with your undergrad degree, right? And then you get the CFP, because you need the undergraduate degree in order to sit for the CFP. Then you get the CFP. That's another signal of more information that you have. You got the master's. Okay, I'm drilling down some more, and then I'm getting maybe a CLU or whatnot. And so there's school loan designations now, right? financial counseling, divorce specialist, so on and so forth, right?
So
these are signals, though, particularly with a practitioner. There's signals that I have taken the time to learn more mastery. I keep on saying that word. To apply to my clients and give them, you know, more in-depth service.
Okay, so let's play devil's advocate and say I am about to graduate in May 2020. Right, I'm a senior right now. I'm getting my bachelor's in finance, and I'm saying I want to go and be a financial professional. Right, I've already checked the box of undergrad in a few months. And I'm deciding, now that I have this undergrad, should I spend the time to go into postgraduate studies with the master's of financial planning? Or should I just go ahead and try to get hired and gain the experience that's going to allow me to eventually, you know, use the CFP marks because I've satisfied all the requirements? Let's kind of, you know, look at each path. Let's look at it from the first level. Let's look at it from a time and cost investment. What would you say the pros and cons of either one of those paths are from a time and cost investment?
Right, right. You know, as far as time is concerned, okay, let's right out of the gate, out of a undergraduate program, right? Right out of the gate, let's go get a job. That's number one. Okay. That's number one. Okay, let's go get a job. And if you're coming out of an undergraduate program, I have a lot of friends in the industry that own practices. And then I've also talked to, you know, many people in the wirehouse channel, you know, the big firms or whatnot. It is not expected to have a CFP right when you graduate. It's not expected. The program, particularly if it's a financial planning program, prepares you to gain employment and qualify to sit for the exam. Those are the two things. All right. So workforce ready and qualify you to sit for the exam. Now, sitting for the exam itself after the undergraduate degree is going to take you another 6 months to study for. Okay. There's no question. You're talking about 300 to 350 hours. All right. Trust me, I tried to take it cold out of undergrad or a master's degree, and I failed miserably. All right. So I rarely know of a person to come out either an undergrad or a graduate program and take the CFP exam cold and pass. All right. There's PhDs that they at least give themselves a month or two just to look over some things.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now we're at the graduation stage. All right. You gain some employment. Now you have life, right? You have to onboard at your firm. All right. You're probably moving to another city. You're probably, establishing your living arrangements and getting settled and whatnot. This is why the window of expectation for undergrad or for undergrad, just a recent undergrad, to pass the CFP exam is 12 to 18 months.
I was even going to say 2 years.
Yeah, even 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, 12 is hurried. However, you know, I hear from graduates all the time, and they're saying, okay, I have to world beat in that first 12 months or first 6 months or 8 months. Or as soon as I finish undergrad, that July exam, if you graduate in the spring, I need to take that, or I need to take that November exam. And I agree with you. You can then be extended to 24 months. You know, so you're having to onboard at your firm and adjust the life at the same time. So that 24 month window is where you can obtain the CFP. Now, that's a good segue into, okay, if you are indeed out of school and, you know, you have employment, okay, if that's going to take 24 months and you have access to an online version of a master's degree, okay, why not do both?
Which is what I did. Well, I actually did my master's first. But to your point, if you know you're looking at a 2-year window of, let's say, being credentialed and finishing your postgraduate degree, why not include it in that? Now, and probably the only thing would be, since you're going to commit the time anyway, correct, it would probably be the monetary cost that would be, I would imagine, the major hurdle.
Right. And my saying for the dual effort, which is a master's degree and CFP, is two for the time. It's not two for the price of one, because again, you have additional cost. However, it is two for the time. Yeah. So
and I think the other thing too to kind of keep in mind here is, what is your end goal? Right. What is your end game? And it may be hard to know when you're, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old, but to spend some time, and we've talked about this before, with mentorships, with support groups, with, you know, study groups, so you can be getting a better feel. Hopefully you've done some internships along the way. So you're kind of, you know, fleshing out where you want this thing to go. And you're just not in school for the sake of being in school.
And there's something to be said about experience. Right.
Yes, I agree.
There's something to be said about experience. The master's is not going anywhere. Okay. I actually finished my undergrad in 03, and then I was in banking at the time, and I was introduced to financial planning in 2002. However, I just didn't know if I wanted to go that route or not. And then I worked in banking, and then I started my investment track in about 2005. And matter of fact, it was a bear market during that time, and I ended up having to go back to being a teller, and I ended up getting introduced to the investment person just by happenstance, you know. But no, I went back. No, it wasn't necessarily happenstance. I went back to work and did something that may not have been on the direct path, but I ended up being in the right place at the right time. Mm. So that said, I went to get my master's degree in 06. Okay, so you can see that the master's degree didn't go anywhere. I circled back. So,
well, I'm gonna do you one better. I got my undergrad in 98, and I went back and got my master's in 2013.
Yeah, see? So it's not going anywhere. And well, I think we can both attest that during that gap, so to speak, we were gaining experience. And we were gaining experience. And then when we went back, it was a choice of, okay, I want to get even better. No. So
very focused. I will say this about the gap, the way it played out for me is, when I started my master's program, I think I was way more focused than I would have been doing it directly out of undergrad. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. I had built enough margin in my life, even though that I had a full plate on the personal side, that I was able, from a maturity standpoint, to handle everything, job, going back to school, family, blah, 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 blah. Whereas I know I wouldn't have been able to do that in my early 20s. And,
going back to the cost. So now let's get back to the choices, right?
Yeah.
If you're coming back, if you're coming out of undergrad, right? And again, I love your point of is, you know, it's time, cost, and actually where you want to, the path that you want to see. Those are the three things.
Yep.
Okay. So if you're one thing that I did, I got my master's degree at 28, and I rushed through it in a year. And I don't even recommend that. I recommend taking the 18 months to do it, but you can get it done in a year. But it was, I don't recommend that. That was hard. 18 months, which far as time, since we're suggesting or giving some advice on time, it's about 18 months.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was boots on the ground. That wasn't including being at work either. I was actually at the university. So if you're doing an online program, you can get it done in 18 months as well, as far as online. There wasn't that many online programs back in 06. So you can still get it done in 18 months. However, just like the CFP itself, this takes careful planning and commitment. Okay. Now, even at 28, I thought I was, my worst enemy was time. I was like, I got to get it done. I'm almost 30. You know, I thought I didn't have any time. Now I'm 40.
So, you're like, what was I rushing for?
What was I rushing for? I had plenty of time. So with that, I suggest for those that are 23, 4, you know, around that age, coming out of 22, coming out of undergrad, if you have the opportunity to go straight through and you're at a program, boots on the ground, I'd say take that extra year because you are boots on the ground. You're young. You're already there. You're already used to a certain lifestyle. So you have time. Oh man, I share with young people all the time. Being young, your greatest asset is time.
Right.
Time to invest, even if it's $50 a month. Time to get some insurance. All right, because you go into a life insurance company and you walk in and at 23, they're like, man, come on in.
We'll take your premiums for 70 years.
Right, absolutely. But it's time. Because, but the person itself, the young individual, they should be walking into the office getting life insurance too, because it's cheaper.
Let's circle this up. So from a time cost, and let's call it that that perspective of where you want to go. So if you're already in that mode, and I know what you're talking about, that student mode, you're studying, maybe you got a year left on your lease after you graduate, and you're like, maybe I should go ahead and do that. So you can evaluate that on an individual basis. Or if you're like, I got bills to pay. You know, maybe you got a young family. Like I was married with a family when I graduated. So there was just no way I was going to go back to school. I was going to go out there and get a job. So you got to evaluate your own situation and then make a decision from there. But I think we've given everybody kind of like several points to consider based on that. What would you say is the potential, and I know how this is hard to judge, so I'm hedging just a little bit, but the ROI or potential opportunity from either path?
Right. So right out the gate, if we're going to keep it simple, there's a couple of different scenarios that you could consider. And this fits right into financial planning. I love going back to the financial planning process of where you have to analyze your current situation, right, and see the advantages and disadvantages of it. And then you skip a couple of steps forward, and now you're giving the recommendations.
Yep.
and giving alternatives. So this is what we're doing. Gotta love this conversation as it fits back into the financial planning.
Note that, audience. This is practitioner, all the six steps of financial planning right in here.
Right. So now we're at the analyzing your current situation, right? And if keeping it simple, if you're coming out of an undergraduate degree, focus, get employment, transition to your next stage of life, and then focus on obtaining the CFP. That's the first clear road, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that road. And you're talking about ROI, you're going to have to invest in some sort of books. Doesn't matter what program you use, because they all have their specialties and whatnot. However, there's one ingredient that you need across all of them, all right? And that's time commitment, all right? So we're going back to that 24 months, right? if you want to just go down that road, that's great. And that has the biggest near-term ROI.
And unpack that a bit, because I would agree with you, because if you can start making, let's call it, even as a entry-level planner where you're not even doing a whole lot of stuff, you know, associate parent planner type of position where you're just really, you know, shadowing people and you might be doing a lot of grunt work or administrative work. I mean, you can still probably be making 50 to 60 and you're already done with your degree. And so you've invested that time. Now you got to pay off your loans possibly or whatnot, but that probably has the biggest potential. Cause unless, I mean, you're only going upward from a income standpoint, unless you maybe decide to take a pay cut or something like that, because you want to start your own business.
Two other things to consider as far as ROI.
Okay.
There was a old school movie called Other People's Money with Danny DeVito. Okay. So your credit worthiness. Okay. This is how you really get ROI. If you have a gainful employment, particularly an employer that has vision, and many RIAs and also at the wirehouse level, they have reimbursement programs for the CFP.
That's a great point.
It's a great point. So they're mostly reimbursement. So you put the money up front, and however you get that back in return when you pass, that's number one.
Yep.
And it's we're using other people's money. And then number two, 70-80% of the time, you also get a pay raise when you pass. Okay. So that's the really, you're talking about ROI. You're making money right there.
And so this would be with that first clear path that you said, like go finish your undergrad and go start studying for the CFP. Because the things that may be lost on people, go look at the CFP.net website, but you basically got to have the four E's as they call it. You got to have the education, which you already have. You got to be eligible you got to have the experience in order to earn the marks. You got to have we've set the education already. The exam. You got to pass the exam.
Yep.
So that's going to take you, in most cases, like you just said, 18 to 24 months, and you may be able to be reimbursed by that, and you may get a pay raise from that. So to me, that does seem like the highest ROI path to your.
That's the highest ROI. When you get to that second year or third year, then you get to reassess what the direction of your career, and you've learned more about your career direction because you've been out there for a couple of years and at this firm, to where you're learning different parts of the planning process and whatnot, and discovering what your strengths are, and then you can go then start saying what's next, where do I specialize, what path do I want to go from here, and you're still young. You know, now for then the other path is if you qualify for a scholarship for the master's degree, this is the second path. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about ROI again. All right. And you get some assistance and you get your master's degree subsidized from the school. And then you also have maybe some help from maybe parents or whatnot, or you have a job on the spot and you're able to continue your standard of living without increasing the amount of debt load that you've taken, all right? Because that also considers, I mean, what was your debt load during an undergraduate degree, all right? And if you can take on a little more and not be exorbitant, okay, great. Go ahead and take that extra year. And then when you come out of a master's, wow, okay, now you're set up to have a master's degree and also the CFP in short order, all right? Still within an 18-month window. So again, we're talking about ROI, and if you can get some financial assistance and you want to, if you can live that lifestyle and you have the opportunity where you don't, where you can forego maybe a year or two salary.
The delayed gratification.
Correct.
Yeah. And basically, if you can live like a college student for another 2 years, you can probably make it work.
Right.
Let me ask you this. This is a hybrid path that I'm coming across a lot. Because of the people that are getting attracted to this career that are outside of the industry now, these career changers,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you may have an expertise of whatever, non-finance, right. 4, 5, 10 years. What I've been offering to people is don't quit that job just yet.
Correct.
That is correct. That job and try to work in another 4 to 5 hours doing your, this as a side hustle, you know, whatever that looks like, volunteering, going back to school, blah, 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 blah. Because right. once you cut off that income source, you're going to be kind of out of luck because there's like, there's no way for you to make money. Nobody's going to hire you. You're a non-finance person to this industry. You're brand new. You got to start over. So right. What is your advice there?
Well, my take on that, that's great advice, Dominique. Great advice. Don't quit your day job. All right, that's number one. And then number two, across the life cycle, all right, time is not free. Mm. Okay. You know, a lot of people say, okay, what do you do in your free time? Okay. time is expensive, particularly, it has its cost across the life cycle at different stages. When you get at more an advanced age, you do find some free time, okay? Because in theory, you've accumulated assets, you've accumulated income, all right? So you can just bask in the glow of leisure as you approach retirement. When you are early on in the life cycle, either early stage or in that middle part of the life cycle, all right, free time costs money,
yeah.
Okay? Whether you're buying capital goods or investing in yourself. Okay. So when you are working your day job and you are, I'm binge watching The Queen right now, The Crown on Netflix. Okay. All right. That cost me money, but I could do that.
Yeah.
Well, if I was making this decision, then I would invest my time, my free time into my human capital. And that would be studying and attaining two things, either the CFP or the master's or both. Okay, because now my hobby and my binge watching time, all right, that 4 or 5 hours, that one more episode, right? All right, that 4 or 5 hours, okay, that's study time right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so when folks say that they don't have the time, and that is incorrect. So you just transferred from binge watching Netflix to having focus on the next 24 months of accomplishing your goal for your career direction.
Thanks for taking the time with me today to listen. Just one quick question before we continue. Have you subscribed to my YouTube channel yet? If you haven't, I want to give you just one more reason to subscribe. Each week, I'm going to be sharing what I've learned in 20 plus years in the industry so that you can reach your goals faster. How's that? Now back to this week's episode. And I like that perspective, right? Because I walked that path before and we've probably both done it. I mean, I remember when I decided to go back to my postgraduate studies and earn my degree, my master's degree, it originally started out with wanting to obtain the CFA designation. And basically all the free time I had, I made a deposit into myself, which meant basically no TV for 2 years. and all the free other time that I had was spent with my family.
That's correct.
Because I had to find a way to wedge in 15 to 20 hours a week to study.
Correct.
Because I didn't know the stuff
I want to make this point too. When you choose, okay, a career path or something to do in life, all right, one must enjoy the process.
Mm. All right.
This is something that I choose to do because I want to do this. I would enjoy putting in this work. I will enjoy working this career for a number of years. This is my, you know, that oft used word passion to do. Okay. If that mindset is, because you started off, you know, analyzing what you would like to do and you created the list and whatnot for the career changers. Okay. Since we're talking about career changers and this is what you chose to do. And you say, I'm going to get a level of happiness, utility, and a better well-being for this, then that 24 months and cutting off that TV, not binge watching this, that, and the other, this ought to give you more utility.
This is true.
Give you more happiness because you are pursuing your life goal. So,
on the flip is if you don't feel you can make that investment, then you need to really evaluate whether or not this is what your passion is.
That's correct. If investment in yourself, far as those career changes is concerned, if this is too labor intensive or more of a chore or a have to instead of a want to, then yes, reanalyze and go into a different direction. However, I believe financial planning, that it can have two F's. You know, it can, and on both sides, whether you're trying to be a planner or being a prospect or a client trying to get some financial planning. Fear can drive finances, or fun, or a little bit of both. Okay. So those are the two F's when you talk about financial planning. But we always don't have to talk about fears or anxieties when we're talking about pursuing financial planning or gaining services either. Financial planning can be fun.
Yeah, right? I agree.
So these 2 years for career changers, if you set out on that, then I suggest for a dual effort, two for time. So go ahead and pursue not only them, if it's cost effective in your household budget. All right. And there's scholarships out there and assistance at these universities and at these certificate providers as well.
Yeah, so, you're right.
So there's it's not all out of pocket. So, and matter of fact, if you're currently working, it depends. If you're in financial services right now, they may consider reimbursing you for an education reimbursement or education assistance program. Okay, that's also a possibility. And also at the universities themselves. So two for time if you're a career changer.
So on the last angle, if you will, for evaluating the CFP versus the master's, I want to look at relevancy, right? So we've covered time, cost, and we've covered ROI, potential opportunity for all those three individuals. I want to look at relevancy from the standpoint of what does the potential consumer of whatever you're building in this human capital factory of yourself, what does that potential consumer think of this, right? So, and I'll set this up by saying there's been a lot of press, there's been a lot of publicity, there's been a lot of dollars that the CFP board has put into giving this those three letters some stature in the eyes of the consumers of financial products which or services, which will be your eventual clients. Maybe not so much as, you know, masters of financial planning. Like that degree program probably only came about, and I would say in the last 10 years. So let's talk about relevancy, because if you're going to practice, you do have to start to think about clients. If you're going to stay in the classroom with all this, then probably not that big a deal. Like if you really just want to go down the path and teach people how to do this, then that's something different. What are your opinions there?
Right. So no, that's a good point. Now, also, too, far as relevancy is concerned, I want to say the pursuit of the CFP, and also if you decide to go to a master's program and whether you're at a university or a certificate program, there's something to be said, too. Certificate programs are about convenience, okay? And then when you're talking about university programs, there's something to be said about having a network, all right?
Yes.
It's really big, all right? I mean, it's immeasurable having a network. Now, fast forward to relevancy, right? There was a time here about a decade ago to where the differentiator between just a, well, I wouldn't say just the public perception of a financial advisor and a financial planner, the differentiator was fiduciary standard. Okay. Now that is becoming with the increased popularity of the CFP designation, that is coming a little bit of commoditized as well. So now our profession is shifting from differentiating yourself from the fiduciary standard, which all should have, and I support fully, to niches. Okay. And when you're talking about relevancy, and this is where we talk about career changers and taking that 2 or 3 years, even from the undergraduate folks, to where, okay, where do I want to specialize in? And this is where the relevancy of something like a master's program comes into play. All right. Different programs have different niches, actually. Okay. Some may be heavy in the psychosocial part of planning.
Behavioral economics and all that kind of
stuff. Behavioral economics, right? Yeah. Client communications is great at Texas Tech. Then there's life planning out at Golden Gate in California and whatnot. So this is where when you mm. talk about relevancy, you start. Then we kicked off the podcast with this, which is figuring out what you want to do and getting more specific with your human capital attainment. Okay, what do I want to be good at? So this is where the relevancy comes in. This is where you start shaping your career, either as a practice owner or part of a practice.
And let me say parenthetically, I'm going to link a video that I did about my book recommendations, because I think what you're putting in, it's kind of the garbage in, garbage out type of deal. If you're consuming pieces of literature or publications, white papers, books, whatever, from people that are inside the industry that is giving you some thoughts on their view and their perspective, it's going to help search or shape what you're talking about. And it goes back to something you said in a talk that we had earlier, which is research. Like, it's going to be hard for you to develop an opinion about what you want to do as far as a niche and who you want to be relevant to if you're not, you know, looking at people that are already in an industry to see what they're doing and go, okay, something like that. Okay, not quite. And then turn the knob or the dial to the right or to the left.
It's, absolutely. You know, so yes, in any career choice that you make, one thing of what, like with any designation or certification, okay, there's that good old thing called CE, right?
Gotta love it.
Gotta love it. That continuing education, right? And this also shouldn't have to be forced upon you, okay? Research and just being a citizen and being a live human being should be a central point of existence, all right? This is on anything, all right? But particularly your career. But go in there, you know, put down the words with friends, and I'm bad with the USA Today app. You know, I'm checking the next sports news and whatnot. I've read like 6 articles doing research on, you know, who to play on Sunday for his fantasy football, or getting somebody else's business on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatnot. And then I've caught myself, you know, doing research on something that has no return. Right. Mm. So
I see your point, sir.
So using that time to research on things that do have return, or you're okay. Let's, and you know, listen, we shouldn't also take the fun out of life either. This is my thing too, about, you know, when you talk about financial planning, we're always talking about budgeting, saving and whatnot. Hey, you know, spending is in there too.
Yeah.
All right. So we're not saying, hey, spend your whole life and you know, everything you have to read has to be financial planning or whatnot. Yeah. However, do some research on what you want to do. Do you want to be a divorce specialist? Do you want to be a special needs family specialist? I have a friend that services board gamers. It's a board gaming community here across this country, across the world, actually. Yeah. Right? Huge conventions. And this has been a hobby of his for 20 years. So when he decided to open up his RIA, all right, his firm specializes in this camp.
That was a pretty natural inclination for him because of his own passion, right?
Correct. So continue to do that. To your point, Dominique, do that research. Read upon where you want to be. And don't be afraid about where you want to be. Like when he chose that board gaming or crowd that he wants to serve, you know, some people may have said, huh?
Right. I'm pretty sure there were a few.
There were a few. However, he has a successful firm. Yeah. Now. You know, so yeah, do that research and learn where you want to fit. And this, and coming back to the conversation is this is what master's degree programs, they're in that group of designations.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I said that different master's programs have different niches to where you can specialize in certain areas and you get, and it is a professional degree, master's are just like the MBA. It's just more specialized. Yeah. Another avenue you could take is, okay, well, I'll skip or pass on the master's degree. I have the CFP already, but then now I can go start getting that alphabet soup, so to speak.
Yeah.
And not waste any time. Make sure that alphabet soup is pertaining to the direction of your career and your passions. If you want to learn about life insurance, okay, go get that designation. If you want to do more counseling, do that designation. So masters are in that scope or in that bucket of drilling down and specializing and shaping your career.
No, I would agree. I think the original question by the users was, you know, CFP versus masters in financial planning. But what I would expand that to say is that, you know, if you're just, you know, holding those two side by side, obviously you can kind of work through the rubric that we just, you know, established in this discussion. But to your point, I think master's programs, if you look at it more macro, that the value comes in, you know, so if you want to be a financial planner, you know, kind of generalist, then yeah, master's of financial planning. Myself, I actually have my master's degree in securities analysis and portfolio management. So that's more of an investment centric focus. Mm-hmm. To your point, you can also do things around more behavioral or life planning. So you really got to, I think it jumps back to what we said is you got to do some research to know where you want to go. And so you're just not, you know, pick a master's degree. No, it needs to be more intentional than that. Right. Because at the end of the day, you are going to be spending some time, some money, you're going to be giving up some things. These are going to be things that you're going to have to, you know, offer on the altar.
So
that you get some return back. And then you're going to look up in 2 years or whatnot, and you're going to go, I'm glad I made that investment. At least we hope that's the decision you come to. Right. So
If you want to just boil it down. So after our, and I appreciate this conversation. This is
This has been great, man.
Because it's part of both of our paths, you know? So if you want to just boil it down to three things, and maybe it's just one, and there's 2A and 2B, which is one, if you're coming out of an undergraduate program, the best ROI is to get gainful employment. You have a 24-month window, so to speak. Your employer may reimburse you, more than likely, will reimburse you for your CFP or test or exam, okay? And then you may even get a raise. So that's one, okay? Then there's 2A and 2B. And 2A is for the undergraduate coming out that can continue their life, college lifestyle, maintain that college lifestyle, get that and use that 18 months to go for the two for time. Okay. If you can have your education subsidized a little bit, okay, great. Do that 18 months and do two for time. Career changers, same thing, two for time. Okay. So that's kind of like a summation there. And there's for sure nothing wrong with just pursuing a CFP. Okay. And then us backing it up with designations in your area of chosen expertise.
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up well. I think if somebody's listening to this and they still don't know what to do, I don't know what to say. I don't know what else we can say to help you figure this out. You know, you may want to pick another career.
Right.
So I appreciate the time, my friend. This has been great. You always have a very, very deep and unique perspective. And I think that's just, you know, that's the beauty of our relationship is, you know, Prairie View produces productive people, as we like to say, and you've gone and you've done your thing in academia as well as practicum, and our paths have kind of intersected. So it's always great collaboration, and enjoy the conversation whenever we get a chance to chat it up like this.
And we get to smile and laugh.
That's the number one thing. Got to enjoy what you do, man. Like you said, enjoy the process. That's great. Sure. Well, Preston, I'm going to let you go, man. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your wisdom with everybody today.
Thank you, friend.
All right. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.